you have to tap into our deep historical knowledge that we are all potentially gold mines, that we, if not defined by the desire to compete, but defined by the goal, which is to do something beautiful and to be someone beautiful. And that's how collaborations come about, you know, that's how co-creations come about.
Hello and welcome to the CineDB podcast series about African film professionals, hosted by three film curators and critics, one Anglophone, one Francophone, and one Lusophone. This 18-episode podcast series features directors, producers, educators, curators, and critics who share their experiences and reflections around their work. I'm your host, Katarina Hedren, film curator and critic, and in this episode, I'm talking to Anicia Uzeyman, a multidisciplinary filmmaker whose creativity and love for freedom know no bounds. In this rich conversation, Anicia talks about arts as legacy and proof of life, and about the definition and meaning of ethical collaboration, among many things. Rwandan-born actress, playwright, and director Anicia Uzeyman's directorial debut, Dream States, entirely shot on iPhones, premiered in 2016. She is the co-director and cinematographer of the sci-fi musical Neptune Frost with Saul Williams, which premiered in the Director's Fortnight section at Cannes Film Festival 2021. Her first book, a poetic treatment of her original screenplay Salomea, Salomea, was published the same year. Thank you for joining us for this conversation. I hope you enjoy it.
Hey, Anicia, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for accepting the invite.
Thank you for having me.
So great. Let's start immediately and talk about your journey in film, how it started and where you're now.
So how it started? It started because I have this crazy urge to create things. I think it's in my nature since a very long time, since I was a child. As long as I can remember, I think I was always writing and inventing stories as companions, I would say. I would find that place soothing and friendly. And I needed a friendly place. And so I think that's how it all started. I needed a place where my imagination could expand, where I could be who I want to be, where I could be seen as I wanted to be seen.
That's beautiful.
As someone amazing and, you know. And the time I grew up in, we're not really in that, you know, today we are telling children that they are beautiful, that they are amazing, etc. But I grew up under a totally other environment and mood. And so I would say that that's how I fall into acting. I fell in love with acting, telling stories and through now embodying them for myself. So I spent many hours, countless hours as a child, playing every character. I cannot tell you how many times I had, like, you know, crazy adventures. And I traveled, I was doing all type of things, and eventually I really came serious about it. And so serious that I entered a conservatory in France. So I did a superior school of performing art in Rennes, which is in France. It's one of the four greatest schools of acting in France. And I started working in acting, in theater, then in cinema, and so on, and found myself again a little bit frustrated by not finding really the stories or the spaces that I thought I would enjoy or that would tell stories that I would be interested in. As any actor of color, as any Black actor, I encountered all those cliché things, you know, which are like, can you have an accent? Or can you be from, you know, the hood, blah, 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 etc. And for a long time, I was happy to act. Until at one point, I became a little depressed. You know, I felt the heaviness of being put in the framing of the others and the others being the majority and being white and being, because I was in France. And
yeah.
And so I restarted to write. So I wrote plays first. I opened up a theater in Paris. Yes. And we created my plays and I started to direct. And so I would say that my journey into filmmaking is really through, you know, that lens, meaning I'm really coming from the performing side of things and my understanding of the stage, of the writing, of the directing really comes from the experience I had while performing for other directors, other stages and on other sets. So I wrote a few plays and then one day I had that ID for a film and I looked everywhere for if anyone could help me, etc. But of course, when you're just starting to make films, people are like, yeah, okay, come back when, you know, when this, when that, when this, when that. So
yeah,
I will never make this film if I don't do it now. I had the opportunity to go on tour in the United States. It was my first time touring the United States and with a band of musicians, of Black musicians, as I should say. And I wanted to make that story on that tour. And it was the opportunity to, you know, to talk about things that I thought were very, very cool to talk about. And so I was like, nobody wants me to do this. How can I do it by myself? And that's how I did my first feature, Dream States, with iPhones.
Yeah.
So I did the feature. We toured 40 states with Saul Williams Band. And we were shooting while touring with the first gen iPhones.
And what was it in this situation that made you pick up the camera for this, like that made you see your film in it?
Well, because nobody wanted to help me. And I was like, I was looking for cameras and there was a production that maybe was willing to lend me a camera. I was looking for help, for money, for etc. And in the other hand, I had the opportunity to film something that would, if you were in a normal mode of production, that would cost a lot of money because we were traveling through the United States with people, etc., etc., venues and all types of things where you would have need authorizations and things like that. And then it's my first iPhone. I had just received an iPhone. And one day I was like, wait, I have something in my pocket that has a camera that I could take everywhere. And I'm going to take it into my dreams and come back with the images of it. And that's what I did. So I had that story. And then I was like, it allows you to really... it was the beginning of those cameras. So people were mostly filming themselves and, you know, doing all type of things. And I was like, wait, we could really record a little bit like a historian or anthropologues. We could record what's happening on this planet right now and turn it to the others and having a kind of archival relationship to images. Images also, to me, are a way of keeping record of our existence. I said this because I have that conscience very, very deeply embedded in me, because I have places and people for which I don't have images, for which I don't have records. All that thing of how do you leave traces? How do you
proof of life somehow?
A proof of life, exactly. Yeah. Which is, I think, what art is. I think art is in its essence our desire as human to leave a trace, a proof of life for the future, you know.
Thank you for that reflection. We already talked about like the origin of it, how first art and make-believe and imaginary worlds became a refuge. And it's interesting that you went to creating. My experience is I went to consuming. So it's not, I read a lot and then lately came into movies. But I think that the urge to, or the understanding that one can also create, it didn't come naturally to me. So congratulations on you.
But reading is pretty creative too. But we can talk about it.
So already there, because what I wanted also to talk to you about, which I've heard you say something, I heard you say many things, but one thing that struck me in particular is that a quote, making art in general is an attempt at freedom, which is the opposite of fear. So I would like to hear you talk about that, like art making as a tool for liberation and emancipation.
Yeah, I think it's part of what we were talking about, a proof of life. So if you are like manifesting your existence through the medium of art, I think you are doing a few things at the same time. And one of them is to remind others that you are human.
How crucial.
I said this because it's Nina Simone who said in a law interview, there was that journalist that asks her, like, so what is freedom to you? You know, and she's a Black American woman. What, it's heavy behind. So she started by saying, like, I don't know, you tell me. And then she founds that place where she says, oh, no, I know what it is. Sometimes on stage, I touch that freedom. And then she comes to the realization, you know what that is? And I think for a woman of color, people of color in general, Black people in particular, I think this medium, art, is really a parallel journey to liberation and to freedom. I think a place that don't develop art is a place that is probably not going so well. Because the development of creativity, I think, is essential to civilization. There is no civilization happening and no progress happening without imagination, without creativity. There is no science without creativity. I mean, even in our own body as human. do think that the first manifestation of our desire to live together, to communicate, to love, to be together, to share instead of fighting is art.
Yeah. And I think you're right in like what you said also, where there's no art, there's disaster. And actually, it's impossible. It's especially in those places that art's an unstoppable force somehow, isn't it?
Yes, it's unstoppable. It's also dangerous. I mean, I always think when I'm making anything that there are artists that are not able to make art in some places. That art is so challenging to the places where they live, to the places where they they, you know, that it's dangerous for them. And so there is all that in art and in any political movement, any moment of history of importance, you will see art.
Yeah, no, it's true.
You will see artists. You will see that means of communication through music, through dances, through visuals, through paintings. I mean, it's really a way of visiting our human history that is very interesting.
Yeah. And I think I'm picking up on several things you've said. You talked about art as a means of communication. And I'm also going back to what you said previously about you doing it, and you said nobody wants me to do it. So the fact also that we do it without being invited, like being invited to speak, being invited to exist. And I would like to talk about that also, because then you entered an industry that is so resource intense and demanding. And then we get into, this is a thing that rarely one can do alone. I mean, one can shoot on an iPhone like you did, but there's always film is intense in that way.
It is.
And it becomes automatically a collaboration, and how we collaborate is obviously crucial. And I know that you have a very conscious way. And could you talk about that, your view on collaboration?
Yeah. You know, I say nobody wants. It's not that. It's the industry is comfortable with not really interacting with what we are doing in general. You know, I don't feel alone in that. And so in those regards, as I don't feel alone, I do have a community that is, you know, welcoming what I do. And I do know that people are interested. And then there is also, you respond to something that is a little more abstract than the big man. You respond to the necessity that you have to talk about your time. And as we were saying about A Trace of Life, is not like, you know, something that the industry can control. And I think that when you cannot control something, that's when you find yourself in places where people are like, well, if I cannot control you, if I cannot make a product, all those things, the word products. And then because there are people that are interested in what you're doing and that are there to share it and to to fabricate magic in moments, you keep going. And as you go, of course, cinema is an art of community. It's a community art. It's not an individual, you know, quest like, I would say, I don't know, painting or writing, even though in writing you share it after, but you have that huge moment of solitude. So in cinema, you have everything. You have that moment of writing, so that solitude, and then boom, you you work with hundreds of people. And it is very, very demanding and interesting the way people gather around a body of work or a story. I love that moment, precisely that moment where it's shareable and people start to gather around a story. And that's where I think most of the soul of the projects are made. And in terms of collaboration, which is a very ugly word, they ruined it for us.
tell me your thoughts about that.
No, I always think about, you know, those collabs. I don't know, I don't have a weird relationship with that word, but In terms of that, I always collaborated with people because I come from that art of sharing and community, and theater is the same, and acting is the same too. You cannot perform by yourself for yourself. And it's a reflection of society also. So you have all the dynamics around it, et cetera, et cetera. It's really a mirror for me. And so I collaborated since forever, I think. I had a long period of collaboration with different artists. I collaborated with a director for a very long time. I collaborated with a writer for a very long time. And we started collaborating with Saul Williams practically as soon as we met. And I must say that it's one of those partnerships that are like so organic. So it's like an evidence. It's not like something that we were looking for doing.
Yeah.
I think we are maybe me more than him, but we are people that deeply are involved in sharing space. Also acknowledging that space is rare.
Yeah.
And that if we can make some people enter those spaces, people who maybe have even more difficulty entering those spaces, it's natural for us to invite people in those spaces. And so for us to start collaborating, it was just starting to dream together, you know, share our stories, share our backgrounds, see how our backgrounds, our stories and our beings, you know, converge and diverge and create waves. And then next thing you know, there is a story that comes from those discussions and that encounter, you know. It's like pollination, I would say, you know.
So you talk about these spaces of sharing being so rare, which is true, and also so fragile. And I was thinking about that moment when you said, like, that moment when we come together, it's like a beautiful, beautiful opportunity and something about to be born, but it's also such a fragile moment. And the way you say, the care that with which you approach things, because that moment, as we have seen, is also one where exploitation often enters there. And I want to use the word extraction, because I obviously also think about Neptune Frost, which is like set in a mine, and how easily it can be, look, we bring this and you are so happy because we're bringing this, so we can basically do anything and you'll be grateful anyway. But you were very mindful of that and the co-creation that you're talking about now, and how to not extract, but to invite, and to I mean, in your casting, obviously, but also in crew, how you built your crew and how you built all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it is a joy to co-create. I think it's a joy. It's in the same time more constraints, right? It's a challenge. But the challenge is worth it because you see at the end of the process, you see beauty. You see love. And so the care, I think, is embedded in that consciousness that we all have, I think, that we should not reproduce those schemas and horrendous ways of behaving between humans. And as someone that knows those ways, I think it is our responsibility, and it is very important that we wake up and stop repeating and reproducing models that are like infantilizing us, that are neocolonizing us, that are, you know, looking at us from a view that is superior. It's our possibility now, us that went through it. Every generation has the possibility to do better. We have to do better also on the continent. We have to decolonize our mind, and we have to find ways. And I think one of the ways to do that is to invent new collectivities, new ways of being together.
Yeah.
And in those new ways of being together, there is a lot to do with very much like how we used to be before all those things happening, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have to tap into our deep knowledge, our deep knowledge, historical knowledge that we are all potentially gold mines.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Yeah.
That we, if not defined by the desire to competition, but defined by the goal, which is to do something beautiful and to be someone beautiful and to share something with the world that is particular. So that's how collaborations come about, you know, that's how co-creations come about. And so in those regards, for instance, for Neptune Frost, well, yes, we did do a crew with all heads of every department that were Rwandan primarily, and we had a few, very, very, very few other people, Kenya and US mostly. I mean, three people outside of Rwanda came in. So we decided consciously that in Rwanda, for instance, precisely, it's not so long ago that cinema really emerged in Rwanda, around the 2000s, something like that. And people have been on sets since then, on American sets, on French sets, on Belgian sets, and all of those things. And they have been since 20 years or 15 years, the third or fourth assistant.
Yeah.
You know?
And grateful for it.
And grateful for it. And so all those mechanisms in place, like being in those type of conflict and ways of being talked to, etc., etc., etc. And so we decided that we wouldn't do it like that. We would find the means to give those technicians that have so much experience to really co-create with us and to use all that knowledge and all their resources in terms of creativity, I mean, you know?
Yeah.
And so we did that. We decided that it was a complicated choice because, of course, the Americans or French or Belgian, they come with their crews because they have also the money from those countries, right? Yeah. They're produced by those countries. Even though after that they said that is an African movie, they are produced by those entities, by those foreign countries. And so as the country who is putting money in a project, of course, they want to see their people getting the money.
Exactly.
And so often you found yourself on a project that shot in Senegal or whatsoever, and the full crew is French.
Yeah.
Because of that production system and those pockets that have to feed the same pockets, etc., etc. So those relationships are very established. And you see what I mean.
No.
I cannot do that. And I was head of the camera department. So I was like, there is no way I'm working on those things. And after that, it's hard. You know, it's not, that is a beautiful idea, etc. But it's hard for people actually who have been conditioned to work as third and fourth, etc., to take the lead. It's super hard because you have to deplug your full ways of, you know, compensating and acting and reacting. And so, yeah, we did that. And then we decided to construct the material. We went on a very conscious ecology of working. I think we created an ecology of a production of how you produce, how can you produce something without interfering and with our goal. And that's Saul who says that all the time, was to protect. Because we had also a story that could not exist in those models. We also had something very sacred and very fragile and subtle to work around. And so we also had to create that environment of questioning those relationships. I would say the film also is the story you bring, the story you are telling is what determine what is the energy and how your model of production is.
I love that. And the words you've used, like the ecology of production. I was going to ask you about the future, but I think you actually already talked about that. Your visions and suggestions, actually, beautiful suggestions on how to create a sustainable future in filmmaking. So I actually think we're going to end there. And I want to thank you so, so much for your sharing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my God. All the best.
All the best. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this conversation. And thanks to Anisha for sharing her passion and wisdom with us. I strongly recommend you to watch both Dream States and Neptune Frost and to follow Anisha's work in the future. I highly recommend our series in French, hosted by film critic and curator Dia Mambo, and in Portuguese, hosted by scholar and curator Janaína Oliveira. You can subscribe to the CineDB podcast series in any of the three languages on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Lucky are those who speak all three languages, because you will get the maximum out of this series. This episode was created by Akinesthetic, with executive production and curation done by myself, Katarina Hedren. Podcast production is done by Vasti Kalitz, with help from Andrew Burnett, who is also our editor. CineDB Africa is a project aimed at connecting African film professionals with one another and audiences. This series is funded by the GIZ, the German Agency for International Cooperation, and the Goethe Institute. Until next time, keep well and keep watching African film.